Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome everybody to this roundup slash preview of our 90s album madness thing that we're doing. It's been a lot of fun so far. After 32 days, the first round has concluded. And as we finish our first round, people are starting to get pretty excited about the basketball picks. We're getting down to conference tournament time, and seedings are starting to be bantered around. So stick with us as the basketball goes on. We'll give you a musical alternative. You can go to facebook.com/suburbspod for daily matchups, second round and beyond, and we will crown a 90s album madness winner in early April. The first round concluded as of today, which was noon on Sunday, March 1st. As we record this, I should say. The second round will begin at 1 p.m. on Monday, March 2nd. So if you're listening to this episode on the day it came out, you will be able to start voting today at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So today we'll recap the first round in the host quadrant, and we'll look ahead to the second round of the sales quadrant. With me, Jim is out doing dad business today. And with me are the two special analysts we've had for this tournament, whose work I've been in awe of and very thankful for. We have both from somewhere in the state of New York. Mike Coley, how are you, man?
Good.
Outstanding. Jason Goble, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I think that may have been the first time anybody ever said they were in awe of something I did. You know? I'm just going to pat myself on the back a little bit.
I'm not easily awed. So, you know, there's that. Take that as a high compliment. Well, let's dig into the host quadrant. But let's start with the number one seed. We had an upset. We had a takedown. And I was frankly pretty surprised by this myself. You know, just about one of my all-time 90s favorites is been sent home early, back to space. Fugazi, upset, spiritualized. Ladies and gentlemen, we were floating in space. So 71 for Fugazi's repeater, 32 for spiritualized. Jason, what do you think about this?
Well, look, I had said up front that I think spiritualized was the one I was rooting to come out of here. That having been said, you know, I think for the most part, the sort of harder albums have won when they've faced one of the softer albums. And I think I had said in the preview, wasn't going to be surprised if Fugazi pulled this out. Not surprised, and yeah, a little bit happy. As I said, Fugazi is definitely a band I've discovered through this podcast, so happy that Fugazi gets to play on.
Love it. Yeah, DC Punk forever. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Nothing against you and one of your favorite albums, Pat, but I thought that Spiritualized was a little bit overrated as a number one seed in this bracket. Because it's a little bit obscure in the grand scheme of things. I think, you know, I mean, I mentioned in the earlier episodes where I tried to order that through BMG or Columbia House or one of those 12 CDs for a penny clubs. And you're always sold out of it. So I guess, you know, people were buying it. But Fugazi, that was my dipping the toes in the water with Fugazi. I had that on cassette when it came out. And I fell in love with it, and so I'm happy they're moving on to a formidable opponent, Buena Vista Social Club.
Yes, that's good. That's quite the matchup. I think you make a great point, Mike, because, you know, I think both these bands probably have grown in stature, or at least in reputation over time, right? They, you know, Fugazi probably is especially, but Spiritualized too. I think a lot of people have gone back, and there's a lot of been a retrospective appreciation of their work and Spaceman 3 and all that stuff. They did break quite a bit of ground with the sound they put together. So, yeah, it's sad to see them go out, but I'm very, very happy for Fugazi, probably the band I've seen the most live in my life. So excellent to see them moving on. So let's see what we got next. I'll go to you, Mike, on this one. Sugar, Copper Blue, number two seed with 94, up against World Party's Goodbye Jumbo, 34. So here's another blowout. Did that surprise you at all?
No, not at all. Not especially not with the core of this listening audience. Bob Mould is one of the suburbs gods, and Sugar's Copper Blue is one of the best pop punk albums of the 90s period. That's one of the best albums. I mean, and it still holds up really well today. Not that World Party doesn't, but I think World Party sounds a bit more 1987 than Sugar does, or, you know, early 90s, 93. And so I think they had the bump from the reunion tour that was just announced that happily I'm going to see in Hudson, New York.
Nice.
I think it's not until October, but I have tickets, so I'm excited for that. But I mean, yeah, it wasn't a surprise that Copper Blue had such a high vote total for me.
Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised. You know, again, with Sugar, I know, like Husker Du, obviously, where Bob Mould's original band did pretty well in the 80s tournament. So the love definitely carried over to the first round here. You know, look, I'll say this. I didn't expect it to win. I do love Goodbye Jumbo. I just think, you know, I think it was the first album that I heard in the night, you know, that I heard personally that sort of really tried to recreate that Beatles-esque 60s style flavor. And I know other bands probably did it before it, but World Party did it so well, and especially Goodbye Jumbo.
Yeah. Very well said. It's a very listenable record, but I think, Mike, you're definitely onto something with not only, you know, how they sort of sound these days, but with the Bob Mould love in our community. Yes, he is going to be tough to beat going forward. So a good win for Sugar there. As we move to the number three seed, we have an upset. Material Issue, International Pop Overthrow. I know this is a pair of gems, and I know he really loves Material Issue and this album especially. But Lemonheads, A Shame About Ray, basically just dragged him up and down the court. And this one probably was over by halftime, I think. I don't know what you think, Jason, that Lemonheads could be quite a matchup to contend with as they go forward.
I mean, highest vote total in the first round in the host quadrant, you know, and there's definitely a lot of love for the Lemonheads, or at least it's Shame About Ray. You know, I'd said the last time it's probably got, you know, the probably out of your entire list in terms of the host quadrant, maybe the most album that I guess got the most sort of radio airplay, for lack of a better word, you know, in between the two hit singles from it. You know, look, I I have a soft spot for Material Issue. You know, there are very few bands, especially looking at this list, that I knew about in the 90s that I was actually listening to in the 90s. Material Issue was actually one of those bands. And admittedly, it was by happen chance, meaning I happened to just be in a place where they were performing live for free. But I was definitely a big Material Issue fan. I forgot to mention this last time. We'll give a shout out to our colleague, our friend, friend of the pod, Justin Steiner. If you go on his Substack, because I did mean to mention this the last time, he's Shoe Fly Pie on Substack, and he wrote a great article about International Pop Overthrow. So if you're, I know a lot of people obviously came in with the Lemonheads and were dead set to vote for the Lemonheads, but if you're listening and you're curious about why there was such love for International Pop Overthrow, definitely go check out Justin's article on Substack.
Great, great shout out. And great that they got 44 votes. I mean, I hope people that didn't know that album went and listened to it, and maybe they made some converts. Mike, on the Lemonheads, I found this really interesting, and I don't know if others knew this, but I did not know this until a little while ago when I was preparing for this tournament. I think when I think of Lemonheads, It's a Shame About Ray, one of the things that pops into my mind right away is Mrs. Robinson. But I didn't know the original. I mean, Mrs. Robinson was not originally on that record. It was like a single that came out a little later, and then they reissued it because it was a pretty successful alternative radio hit and put it on the record. So that makes it even stronger. And I noticed in subsequent releases, the song My Drug Buddy was cut down to My Buddy at times. Now it's been restored to its rightful title. So are you a Lemonheads guy, Mike?
Well, as I mentioned in the preview, the first preview episode, I believe it was, I didn't really pay much attention to Lemonheads because Evan Daniel was such a handsome fella. And I didn't fall into the handsome fella hype. And so I never really gave much of a chance. But Mrs. Robinson, I read an article that mentioned that about Mrs. Robinson that you were just referring to.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
I didn't know that it wasn't part of the album either. And it seemed like none of them wanted it to be on the album, but the record company wanted it. And that's kind of what blew them up anyways, is that song.
So.
That's
when
it got airplay. And you know, that unfortunately, that's sometimes what happens with original bands is they don't get any notice until they cover a song that you may not think they would cover. And that's what gets them noticed. But
so true.
I mean, I experience that a lot just in my local area. I try to encourage the people that I deal with to play their original music, but every once in a while, toss a cover in there because that's when people get their phones out and start recording. And that's where they get noticed. So I guess that this is what happened with Lemonheads, I think. And it's a great pop album. So is Material Issue. I didn't know much about Material Issue back in the 90s. I did hear a few of the songs. I didn't buy the album or anything. But I'm wondering if maybe it's more of a regional band.
Yeah.
Back then, because they're from the Midwest. And I noticed that a lot of the Midwest group of people in this group really know them and really love them. Whereas the Lemonheads, they got a little bit more airplay, so they became more of a national band than Material Issue did. So I think maybe that's why they had such a trouncing of Material Issue in this round.
That's great analysis. I agree with you on that one. You know, and of course, Jim from the Midwest, and he's always held, as long as I've known him, he's held that album in very high esteem. So, I think that's true. Yeah, because I don't even really remember Material Issue, you know, doing a big tour or anything like that. They never had the advantage of a Mrs. Robinson type sensation. So, but I think it's a great point you make about bands who are playing their originals. You got to throw a cover in there sometimes, because sometimes that's enough to make people go and listen to your record, you know, your whole album, you know, if they just see you do a cover that they really like or something like that. And hey, it's always good to give somebody a little something to fall back on when they, some ear candy or something they know when you're playing a show. Well done to the Lemonheads, and they will be a force to be reckoned with, I believe, as a 14 seed coming out strong. And they'll be facing a tough matchup. We'll read out the matchups. We won't get into analyzing them today, but we'll definitely let you know what they'll be up against. All right, moving on. Here was one. Four seed for me was Torch of the Mystics. Admittedly, it's a pretty damn obscure album that came out on a small label from Seattle in the early 90s by a band of total weirdos who I personally love quite a lot, the Sun City Girls. And they went up against Le Tigre. And I think a couple of people had mentioned to me, you know, they had listened to Le Tigre or maybe heard a couple songs, but when you go back and listen to that first record, man, it's really good. And it won this by 37 votes. So the Le Tigre self-titled debut album beats the Torch of the Mystics. I am happy, Mike, that the Sun City Girls got 10 votes. So there's something. There's something there for me.
So that's one of the bands that I did not know of when this bracket was released. So I gave them a listen. And I will say, out of all the choices in this entire tournament, the Sun City Girls is the most Patrick Foster band of bands in this tournament. It is weird. It is obscure. It's cool as hell. But it doesn't have the traction to take on Le Tigre. But thank you for introducing that band to me, because that's a fun listen for sure.
Yeah, if people haven't given them a try, give them a try. You'll either hate it or hate it not as much as you think you might. But yeah, they're super weird, super great. A lot of improvisational stuff and music based on sort of Middle Eastern kind of things together with weird indie rock. But
they're not from South Africa, and they're not women.
No, they are not. From Arizona, I believe, is where they started out of all places. But yeah, Jason Le Tigre, I mean, this record, I think, holds up just fantastically. It's so much fun to listen to.
I mean, it's a fun album. It's a fun album. I was one of the 10 that did vote for Sun City. I echo what Mike said. I think I figured out. Last time I couldn't give you an answer. I think this sort of appeals a little bit to my jam band sensibility. I mean, I understand it's very indie-ish, but that having been said, it's mostly instrumental affair, and I do appreciate it. But yeah, I mean, that Decepticon album I thought was going to be a hard hill to crawl over, I think there are a few others that I think appreciate the fact you introduced Sun City. I think Decepticon probably, and Le Tigre probably has the better chance to do a little bit more damage in this tournament.
Yeah, we'll agree. All right, let's see. So in this side of the bracket, guys, the one seed, the three seed, the four seed are all out. And the fifth seed is out. Now, I did sort of know in my mind, this was the one I put up there, really as probably the most, just personal record that I really, really liked from the 90s. And I had to do it. So I stuck in a Lullaby for the Working Class. I Never Even Asked for Light. Five people were with me on the bandwagon, which is great. And the Super Furry Animals at number 12 picked up 23 votes, which was enough to win, but not necessarily enough to give the Super Furry Animals confidence going into the next round. What do you think, Jason?
So I didn't know either of these albums coming in. I'll tell you, I'm one of the five also on Lullabies for the Working Class. Kind of had me a little bit sold when you mentioned Mogus in the preview show. And, this a nice Americana album. Super Furry Animals, I know they've been around a while. I think they still make music. I never really had listened to them. This was sort of my introduction. Probably end up listening to more of their catalog. Yeah, this is another one where I think the harder, and I'm not saying super furry animals is on the Fugazi level of hardness, but the harder sort of album one at the end of the day.
Mike, what do you think?
Well, I hadn't heard of Lullaby for the Working Class before this tournament. Super Furry Animals I knew of from back in the 90s. There was kind of a burgeoning whales music scene happening back then. Gorky's Zygotic Mincei, and I forget the others, but I remember I used to subscribe to CMJ New Music Monthly, which is kind of an offshoot of CM, College Music Journal, that all the college radio stations would get. And every month it would come with a CD with a listing of every track, and it would always be at the end of the little blurb for each song on the CD, recommended if you like. And so I looked forward to that day. I think I subscribed to that for like 4 or 5 years in the 90s.
Beautiful.
And I still have all my CDs. I'm going to have to do a show based on all my CMJ Music Journal.
That would be great.
CDs that I have. But I remember Super Furry Animals being included on that. And I checked it out and it was great. I loved it. It wasn't this album. It was one of their earlier albums, I think. But as far as Lullaby for the Working Class, kind of gives off a In the Aeroplane and Over the Great Plains vibes to me. But just not quite as catchy as the Neutral Milk Hotel album. But Super Furry Animals has some bangers on it, especially that Do or Die. That's just a straight up rock and roll song. And it's got Northern Lights, got some great vibes to it. I pulled it up on Spotify. You know how they have those little videos sometimes that accompany the songs on Spotify? So in the video for Northern Lights, there's images of men curling. So I give the edge to the Welsh for having a curler in the video for Northern Lights. So I'm glad to see Super Furry Animals moving on, but the Tigre's probably going to smash him in the next round. But I like that album. It's great. I listened to it a lot this week after checking it out again.
And I would agree with both of your assessment on Lullaby. I think they definitely have that Americana vibe, but tinged with something a little darker. You know, you're right. There's that kind of dark undertone about it that appeals to me. I like dark music with dark lyrics. good. I'm glad some people gave that a listen. So. And the Super Furry Animals will definitely stick with you. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I do believe they are still making records, and Groove Fries, as a solo artist, the main leader, is still doing so as well. I believe so. I'll tell a really quick anecdote. The Bish and I, a friend of mine, David Bishop, we went up to Baltimore, about an hour drive from DC, to see the Super Furry Animals playing at a pretty small place. And we hung around after the show, and it was not a big, big place. So they were just out there breaking down their gear, the Super Furry Animals. And we went up and started talking to Groof, and I don't know what we were saying. We were babbling on, and he just sort of gave us a look, and he said, where are you guys from? We said, D.C. And he said, look, over there's some other people that are from D.C. And we both turned around, and by the time we turned back around to Groove, he was gone. So he ended that conversation pretty quickly. he must have been in that situation before, probably a few times. Two weirdos started talking to him. All right, so we'll see how SFA gets along. All right, now these last couple here. Number 6 seed, the Jayhawks. Tomorrow, the Green Grass. And Velvet Crush, Teenage Symphonies to God. 81 for the Jayhawks, 23 for the number 11 seed, Velvet Crush. Mike, this one, did you see this coming?
Yeah, kind of. There's a strong Jayhawks following in this group. And I meant to give Velvet Crush a good listen to, and I didn't get the chance to, but it's definitely a gym style album. Jim loves this
Yeah.
type of music. It's got that power pop feel to it. And the stuff that I did hear, it's really cool. And I'm definitely going to have to give it a better listen. But the Jayhawks, they've been around forever, and they're just like stalwarts of the Americana scene. And their biggest song is on this album, and
Yep.
it's just a great album, just a great band. So yeah, I wasn't surprised with this result.
How about you, Jason?
Yeah, this is what I was expecting. I mean,
Yeah.
Dacko, what Mike just said, I'm glad I got the introduction to the Velvet Crush album. It's a band I definitely did not know about coming into this tournament, but I pretty much knew I was going Jayhawks here. Haven't listened to them in a while, but I definitely was a big fan, late 90s, early 2000s. Saw them a few times, and so yeah, I was expecting Tomorrow the Green Grass would prevail.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think so too. And I think in some ways, like Material Issue, the Velvet Crush album was, had a little bit of a cult audience to it. And it is really a beautiful record, and definitely one you can pull out and put on, kind of at any time, and it really sounds good. So I think the Jayhawks are going to be right up there when it gets down to the last four of this bracket, probably. Okay, let's move on here. Number 7 against number 10. Now, I'll tell you guys, I don't know, maybe I was being a little non-aware of the Breeders, how popular they probably are amongst people in our group with their various connections. But I thought this was going to be a lot closer than it was. Number 7, the Breeders, Last Splash got 92, Superchunk Foolish 44.
I'll be honest. I agree with you, Pat. I thought this was going to be a little closer. I had mentioned last time that I think if you were doing a indie Mount Rushmore, a strong candidate to be on there would be Superchunk. That having been said, I mean, I that Last Splash, was a huge album. I Kim Deal put out stuff, I think, last year, so she may still be people fresh in people's minds. And
Yeah.
to echo what she said last time, it's hard to get away from that riff. So you know what? You know what? We get that riff a little bit more, at least in this 20.
That's very true. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. Mike, what did you think? Were you a Superchunk fan?
I was kind of a late adopter to Superchunk, but I
Okay.
did get in while they were still very active in the 90s. I know they're still doing things now, and I was able to catch opening for Bob Mould a couple years ago on Bob's solo tour, and I loved what he did. I mean, it was just him and a guy playing the cello, and it was a fantastic show. He just did like an hour set of just like his solo stuff and some Superchunk songs, and man, it was such a good way of putting things together. And you never would have thought that the stuff that Superchunk did, their indie heavy stuff, their hard rock and stuff, would translate to just a guitar and a cello. But it definitely translated well, and I've become even more of a Superchunk fan. But Kim Deal, come on, I mean, she's like the indie queen of the 90s. And again, that song was all over the place, and it's still being played. You hear it in stadiums now, Cannonball, and it's just, it's still relevant, that song, Cannonball. The disparate voting here, I can see why, because the Breeders album was just that much more well known, and it was very prevalent in the 90s. Got a lot of radio play, and Superchunk really didn't. They were kind of more relegated to
That's very
college radio.
true. Yeah.
I know that Mac from Superchunk And I want to say his side group is called Portastatic. So I'm not sure if that's what you saw, but I know he has done some stuff where it's a lot more low key, you know, where he will incorporate strings and guitars, but kind of, you know, those super chunk chords, which is pretty cool. So I've always liked the stuff he's done. Okay. And as we mentioned, triple overtime. A buzzer beater by Lou Barlow goes off the rim as time expires in the third OT. Buena Vista Social Club 42-7-0-41, a low scoring matchup. Mike, I don't know. Both these albums, I love them so much. And they ended up kind of in the middle of my ranking, but I am kind of glad to see Buena Vista sneak through here.
I mean, there's such very different albums, but still so very relevant to the 90s music scene. And, you know, this group of just Cuban, elder Cuban musicians just kicking ass with Ry Cooder behind the scenes. And, you know, Ry Cooder, he's just a legend.
Yeah.
He put this album together, and there's a tragically hip lyric where Gord Downie sings, "Get Ry Cooder to sing my eulogy." So it's fitting that Buena Vista took this one at the buzzer in triple overtime. Lou Barlow, better luck next time, buddy. But yeah, it was a great matchup, and it was fun. It was fun to see the chat going on about this album, about this matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got a lot of. We got a lot of indie rock, right, Jason, going through. So it's probably good to have some Cuban music in there.
And I do this again because I screwed up the lyric the last time. No reason to scream. Why don't you like me? Yeah, you lost a very close fight this time. Look, you know, I ended up voting for Buena Vista Social Club. I just think it's a fun album. I don't know if we're supposed to say this or not, because this was when Castro was taking over. So, Viva El Cuba! Viva El Cuba at the end of the day. Buena Vista Social Club into the next round. If I'm not supposed to say that, Jim actually just chimed in on the podcast and it gave you the Viva El Cuba.
That's right. Beautiful. It should be a lot of fun. And as I think Mike mentioned earlier, that sets up the second round. And right at the top, it's going to be Fugazi versus Buena Vista Social Club. So that's really going to be an interesting matchup when that one comes around too. So let's quickly recap the matchups for the second round of the host bracket. We got to go through the second round of the other three, and then we'll be back to this in a bit. But we will do a preview episode on a later update when we get to that point. Fugazi Repeater versus Buena Vista Social Club. Super Furry Animals Gorilla versus La Tigre. We'll be dancing, if nothing else. The Lemonheads, A Shame About Ray against the Jayhawks. Tomorrow, The Green Grass. That's a tasty one. And The Breeders, Last Splash against Sugar, Copper Blue. Those are all going to be great. So we will go in depth with those a little bit later. But happy with the results of the first round of the host bracket. Thanks, everybody who voted. And if you listened to something new, great, even better. Well, that brings us, guys, to the second round, our first second round games matchups. And we're going to start with the sales quadrant. We've got four matchups here. And let's take them as they're written out here in the show notes. Number one, Hootie and the Blowfish, Cracked Rear View, Santana, Supernatural. Who wants to start, guys?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Look, I would say and I think the first round shows, there's definitely a lot of different styles of music in the 90s. But
yeah,
if you were going to go to the dictionary, there's a good chance your dictionary would have a picture of Darius Rucker because I think Hootie and Track Beer View was kind of synonymous with the 90s. Not necessarily the dominant sound. That having been said, I think everybody knew Hootie. You Santana fans, you're the last. I think we commented on the last round. You're the in the last bracket. You're the last of the veterans still standing, but I don't think you're going to be standing after you face Hootie.
Darius Rucker has gone through his entire musical career being referred to as Hootie because of this album, really.
Yeah.
I mean, people call Darius Rucker Hootie, but Darius Rucker is the patron saint of our little sub text thread for the Bourbons and Bourbon and Beyond people. So it's me, and it's Keith Jacobson, and it's the Coops, and it's Billy McNeil, and it's Hans and Brittany from Frank Muffin, and my buddy Mark Zappavigna, who's been going to Bourbon and Beyond with us. And so we're constantly hoping for a Hootie sighting at Bourbon and Beyond. And lo and behold, I think they're on the bill this year.
I was going to say, you got your Hootie.
Yes.
but as Santana being the final legacy act in this whole bracket, he did the thing to help him actually recoup some money from all his lifetime in this industry by recruiting all these other people to help him on this Supernatural album. That Rob Thomas song came on last night when I was working at the brewery. I don't know who put it on. It was not me. But if I never hear that song again, I'm okay with that. So props to Santana, but Hootie's going to take this one.
All right. We're on board there. It's a team ride on predicting Hootie to go through here. That's a heck of a listenable record, and I can see why it sold so many copies. I'm with you on the Rob Thomas Santana collaboration. I don't need to hear that anymore. I've heard it plenty of times.
I will say this for those of you who are potentially anti. I don't know how you can be anti Hootie. I mean, maybe you're right. A little bit sick of Hootie, but I don't know how you can be anti Hootie. I went to one of the Howl Owl Howl shows, which was the group with Darius Rucker, Mike Mills, and Steve Gorman. A lot of your heroes, one of your heroes, Mike Mills, he actually said he was happy he got to play guitar when the Howl Owl Howl did their version of Let Him Cry. So there's also some love from the REM community for Hootie.
Good point. Very good point. So we will see what happens, and that's going to be the matchup that you folks will be able to start voting on before too long. So make sure you're at facebook.com/suburbspod every day to vote. And let's see, that matchup is going to be coming up. So if you're listening today on Monday, March 2 at 1 p.m. Eastern, the polls open. So get your votes in early on that one. Not often, just early. Okay, moving on. We've got two albums that both had convincing first round wins by winning, both scoring in the 90s, and their opponents, oddly enough, both scored 17. So it's Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill, against Green Day's Dookie. Mike, is Alanis going to come up against it here? Do you see a blowout for Green Day?
I don't think so. I think this is going to be close. I really All do. Right. I mean, Alanis album, I mean, I don't know how many singles she had from that album. I think it was at least five, but Dookie had almost as many singles as well. They were both ubiquitous during the 90s. And they're both still doing it. They're both albums are very relevant today. They sound good today, as good as they did when they were released. And they're both doing it the way they did it back in the 90s. There's no drop off between either artist in this. So this is going to be a nail biter. It might be another triple overtime battle.
All right. Sweet. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think, like, I don't think for a long time, Dookie, and I never had Jagged Little Pill, but I could definitely tell you about four or five songs on each record without owning them. So there you go. What do you think, Jason? It's going to be a come down to the wire here?
I'll go on record. I think Alanis is going to pull off the upset. I think it's going to be a close battle. But let's put it this way. I thought when I saw the vote total, which I think it was relatively close to, I think overall vote total, Green Day got more, but it was still relatively close. And I could see in terms of Alanis versus Green Day in the first round, and I could see a few of the Green Day people throwing some votes Alanis's way, and I could see Alanis pulling the upset.
Nice. I'm really looking forward to this now. I was sort of thinking that Green Day might have their way here, but I'm liking what I'm hearing from the expert analysts. So let's see. I'm really looking forward to it. That should be a lot of fun. That is coming up on Tuesday, March 3rd. So that will be right after the vote between Hootie and Santana. Okay, next, on Wednesday, March 4th, the voting will begin at 1 p.m. Eastern time for the matchup between the Bodyguard soundtrack and Nirvana's Nevermind. The Bodyguard soundtrack, one of the very, very top sellers of the 90s. And this looks like it's going to be kind of a test, I think. I don't know what you think, Jason, but we'll see how strong Nirvana is going to be here if they just really blow the various artists. It's like an all-star team they were going up against on the Bodyguard.
I will always love you until Nevermind comes on. I think Nevermind's going to win. I think they're going to win kind of. It's going to win kind of handily. I own both, and I definitely listen to Bodyguard a lot when I, you know, back in the day. That having been said, I mean, I don't give it that much of a shot against Nirvana.
Mike?
I'm on the fence, honestly.
There you go, okay.
There's a lot of Nirvana hate out there. When it comes to, like, when you start talking about the grunge scene from the 90s, you know, you got their core, you know, so Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains. Nirvana's kind of that. I mean, they were the ones who kickstarted that whole grunge movement. They weren't the originators of it, but they're the ones who set that to the mainstream. Yep. I think that's why there's a lot of hate out there. Not hate, but just sick of it, you know? Just not as good or as loved as the others in that category. And despite it being, like, you know, just landmark stuff, Bodyguard, like you said, it's like a dream team of 90s artists and production. You got Babyface and L.A. Reid on there, B.B. Wyans. It's a lot of things happening on the Bodyguard soundtrack that may just kind of carry the way for them. But I think it's going to be closer than other people think it may be.
Yeah, you never know if Kenny G gets hot from deep.
Kenny G may be the Achilles for the Bodyguard.
Interestingly enough, there's a version of Nick Lowe's What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding on this record, performed by Curtis Stigers. And when reading Nick Lowe's biography, it paid for a lot of stuff for Nick Lowe at a time when he really needed to pay for some stuff. So I know he's probably going to be voting for the Bodyguard soundtrack, without a doubt. All right. And our final matchup, which will voting will take place on Thursday, March 5th. It will open at 1 p.m. Eastern. Garth Brooks, No Fences against Pearl Jam 10. Garth's going to need a fence, perhaps, to protect himself. Jason, what do you think?
No, it's funny. Mike inspired me, regaling us of his tales in Floribama and the fireworks display that happened during New Year's Eve and the thunder's rolls. And needless to say, if Garth Brooks somehow pulls off the upset, I've already warned my neighbors that there could be a good chunk of fireworks going off from my fire escape. So hopefully I don't damage neighbors' apartments. That having been said, I'm probably going to have them for the summer because I'm pretty sure 10 is going to win and win pretty big.
Mike, do you concur?
Yeah, I concur. Thunder Rolls is the one that probably carried No Fences to win this one over Rope in the Wind. But at least with this audience, I'm positive that 10's going to pull through on this one. I mean, if Keith Jacobson has his way, he will become the de facto president of 10 Club and rally the voters behind the votes for this one.
Yes, I totally agree. All right. Well, there we have it. Exciting to look at this sales bracket. It seems like kind of the wild card. I think whatever's, you know, going to be in the final four from this side is going to be like, ooh, where did that come from? This could be interesting. So we'll see. And I'm sure it'll be an epic showdown with whatever makes it out of the host quadrant. So that's the left side of our bracket as you look at it. And folks, if you go to suburbspod.com, there's a link there to the album 90s Madness right at the top on a little banner. Very well made there by intern Sam. And all you have to do is click on that, and that'll take you to everything you need to know. It'll take you to a link to the Facebook page. It'll give you a bracket that you can print and fill out like I'm doing. Or it gives you a link to a spreadsheet that we have shared with everybody where you can see the updates after each round of voting closes. All right. Any closing thoughts here, Jason, before we send everybody to the polls?
I think we're good. I think it was a fun first round. Got some interesting matchups upcoming. And, you know, especially this in the sales, I think the Green Day Atlantis is going to be a lot of fun. And looking forward to round two.
Excellent. Mike, how about you? What's your closing thought here?
Same as, you know, piggybacking on what Jason said, there's some really cool matchups in the second round, and I'm interested, especially in the sales bracket, to see some of the commentary that goes on regarding these matchups. But in the host quadrant, that's going to be insane, as for me anyway. There's a lot of, as Pete Jacobson would say, Sophie's choices in yeah. that quadrant. So it's going to be interesting. Both quadrants in the second round is going to be really interesting to check out.
Should be a lot of fun. And yeah, great point, Mike, that you make too. For those who are on Facebook and you follow, there's always a lot of interesting chat as the voting is going on. So there's a little more more fun stuff as the matchup day unfolds. If you got time to pop over there once or twice during the day to just check up on everything.
So one thing I did notice in those Facebook comments is a lot of people, especially in the host quadrant, a lot of people commenting that they've never heard of this band or never heard of that album. And so it seems like, at least in the host quadrant, that people are checking out this stuff that they had never heard of before, which is, I think, the ultimate goal that you and Jim had when you put together your brackets. And that that's what this is all about, really, is to find stuff that you've never really listened to and enjoy it or not enjoy it, and just make your own decision based on stuff that other people shared with you, which is the coolest thing about being in a music community, is just sharing what you like and hoping somebody else might latch on to it.
Well said. Couldn't have said it any better. Absolutely. And along with, you know, having a lot of fun while giving us an alternative to our NCAA brackets going down the toilet, it's a lot of fun to do that. So, Mike, thank you very much. Jason, thank you guys very much. They will be back, folks. We've got them under contract throughout this tournament, and we will have much more from Mike Coley and Jason Goble to come. Make sure to listen to Mike. Tell everybody when your Rockin' the Suburbs radio station show plays.
So Walkin' at a Suburban Pace happens every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. But you can listen straight through the website at suburbsradio.com, or there's a couple other apps out there that you can use to find the podcast. And just... The easiest way is just go right through the website. Just click play on the image that's on there, and that's what we do at the brewery.
There you go. Walking at a Suburban Pace. It's a lot of fun, and all the shows are available, too, on Mixcloud after the fact. If you can't catch it live, you can go and download it there if something looks good and takes your fancy, but it's really a fine, fine radio station. And we will be hearing, I believe, from Jason Goble on tomorrow's podcast. We found a couple of new music picks from January 2026 that got stuck in the seats between the new music train during the ride. So we're going to pull those out and play those for you, including Jason.
I sleep at the station, but that having been said, Mr. Patty was nice enough to hold the train for an extra
day. We always like to
You're
check.
A heck of a conductor, Mr. Patty.
Thanks, sir. We always like to check because some of our riders do occasionally wander off. We need to make sure they're all on board before we take off for the next month. All right. Well, thank you guys very, very much. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll go out with a song here. We'll be back with another bracket update when the time comes after we wrap up the sales quadrant. And with that, I'm Patrick Foster. Mike Coley and Jason Goble, our 90s albums bandus experts, have been with me, and we will talk to you guys tomorrow. Take it. Are you down with me? Explosions don't take to my spine. Nothing's gonna change my mind. I won't listen to anyone's last words. There's nothing left for you to say. Soon you'll be dead anyway. Well, no one is getting out alive. This time I've really lost my mind and I don't care. So close your eyes and get yourself goodbye. Think about the times we spent and what they've been. To me it's nothing. To me it's nothing. To me it's nothing. To me it's nothing. I'm losing all my happiness. The happiness you've been dying. Our loneliness self-confessed me. My anger wells inside of me. I'm taking it all out on you. And all the shit you put me through. Yo, no one here is getting out alive. This time I've really lost my mind and I don't care. So close your eyes and get yourself goodbye. And think about the times it's been and what they've been.
Lou Barlow. Better luck next time, buddy.